Extravaganza.
Hello, all you horror hounds and defenders of the macabre. I am Pops Ghostly, and this is the Horror Pop Extravaganza, episode 18. Used to be able to do all kinds of things at 18. Used to be able to buy cigarettes and stuff, and now it's like 21 across the board. That's you, yeah, which is probably smart.
Yeah, but we're not ready.
Yeah, we're not here to talk about selling tobacco to children. But before we even talk, I got to talk to my man, this beautiful human being sitting across from me. Why don't you, who are you, man? Who are you?
My name's Frank Weenus.
Frank Weenus. What up, Frank?
What up?
Frankie Weenie.
Middle name's Furter. It's German.
Frank Furter Weenus. I hope John somehow hears this. It'd be wonderful. Anyway, Frank, we are here to talk about one of my favorite things. And that is puppeteering.
And oh, I was confused there for a minute. I was like, this could go anywhere.
Puppeteering in a good way. And Brad Dourif. And if you don't know what we're talking about already, we're going to go back to 1988. Because somehow you had never seen Child's Play. And we've got to talk about the birth, the origin of Chucky, who is arguably one of, I mean, he's becoming like crazy big.
Yeah, dude.
The licensing is just insane all over the place. And people love that shit. You know, it's all over the TV series, so many sequels, so many different offshoots, like fucking performances on like late night talk shows and shit. Chucky will be there like, hey, you know, they're just puppeting the motherfucker from behind. So you've never seen this.
I've never seen any of them except for Bride of Chucky.
Which is where I think it takes like the biggest departure from the first three. And not necessarily in a bad way, but it does start doing some different stuff. But in 88, this thing hit in response to the Care Bear craze or the Cabbage Patch doll craze. That's what it was. Where fucking people were like, I mean, it was like, you know, pre-Black Friday, like, hysteria. Right. Like, give me that fucking doll. I'll fucking run you over for the doll. And so, but before we get any further, why don't you do the thing, lay it all out there. Who made this thing? Why did it happen? We don't know, but we're glad that it did.
That's right. We got Child's Play from 1988, rated R, 127 minutes. And I'll tell you, this thing was kind of hard to find if you don't already have it.
Because of the distribution and shit. Like, this was the only one under United Arts. And so you could never get a box set of DVDs and shit with Child's Play and have the first one because they switched distributors right after, or fucking production company, whatever. But they had changed right after the first one. So you never really got them all together. And you know how it is with when people own one thing and they want to do this. And there's something with Child's Play. That's why it hasn't been called Child's Play since the third one. You know, it was always Chucky, Bride of Chucky, Chucky something, fucking Chucky. You know who Chucky is. But you know what I mean? It's crazy. And it kind of sucks, too, because I wish they would put out some big, huge collection of, like, everything Child's Play that's ever been released. But I don't think, kind of like Friday the 13th. I don't know if we'll ever see that. Maybe. Somebody will get broke enough, and they'll right. be like, all right.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I found it on Tubi for free. So it was,
dope.
It's the way to go, man.
Tubi's the shit, dude.
Tubi is the like, shit, dude. I can't say that enough, dude. It's always got the shit that I can't find anywhere.
And that's a beautiful thing. It's free, though. That's what makes it great, that it's fucking free.
And they don't even shove the ads down your throat. I mean, there's ads, but it's not that bad.
No, like three or four in you know, hour and a half. Yeah. So give me the synopsis, though. I want to hear how...
Oh, you want to hear what this thing's about?
Yeah, rates this thing up.
All right, man, here it comes. A struggling single mother unknowingly gifts her son a doll imbibed with a serial killer's consciousness.
Spot the fuck on.
Spot on, dude. Yeah. Like, what else could you say about it, really?
Voodoo. You know, I mean, that's like everything that this thing is hinged on. Like, for you to buy into the story, it's like voodoo. from second fucking one. It's voodoo.
Voodoo.
But I guess it leaves a little something, you know, if you haven't seen, like you've never seen it, so maybe you didn't know the voodoo hoodoo was coming.
I didn't know the voodoo was coming, dude. I was like, Jason, you got Jason, you got Freddy, you got all these origin stories. Chucky's is fucking voodoo.
Yeah. But it matters. It matters. It does matter. Okay, and continue,
yeah, please. They lean hard into the voodoo, too. They don't just, like, tickle your nuts and walk away. Our cast in this one, Catherine Hicks. Who I'm looking at Catherine Hicks right now. This lady just gets better with age, like a fine wine. She is beautiful.
I don't know. Did she? Well, I think she married the puppeteer who did Chucky or something. And they've been together for like ever, like since. I'm like, that's cool, dude.
I get it, dude. When you got your fingers up in a little boy all day long, like that's going to
stop. Continue with our cast.
That's Alex Frank Weenus. If you want to send complaints in.
At his finest.
The one and only Chris Sarandon, dude.
Oh, yeah. I'm thinking, yeah. And she got top billing over Sarandon, which was kind of crazy.
Yeah, that was kind of crazy. But Sarandon just wanted to not play a fucking like pig-faced asshole for once.
That's true, dude. That is true.
Alex Vincent as the little boy. Who's still like,
and he continued to play him though through two sequels, came back in the series and is still kind of doing it. And yeah, like has rode this Chucky thing a ways, which is cool.
His picture on IMDb, he's sitting there with a Chucky doll, like he's leaning into this.
Well, he does a lot of like conventions and goes out and meets people and signs Chucky dolls and shit, you know, all the time.
And I will say, for him being like, if he was like, he must have been like 6 or 7. He fucking kills it in this thing, man. Like, I can't get my 6 or 7.
Leading up to us talking about it, I actually watched it with the commentary on with Alex and Catherine and the puppeteer, and I can't remember his name, but all of them, you know, talking over the thing. And he said that it was supposed to be Andy's 6th birthday at the beginning of the movie.
Oh, okay.
That's, you know, so he had to have been relatively close. And dude does good, man. Little man holds it together and shit in some good ways. Sure, it's a little bit campy, but we'll talk about all that when we get into the nitty gritty.
Right. The immaculate Brad Dourif as Charlie Ray Miller. You said his name different. How do you pronounce it?
Charles Lee Ray. I always said Brad Dourif.
Dourif?
Yeah, it's how I don't know. I could be wrong though. I always thought it was Dourif and heard it as Dourif, but
I always love him when I see him pop up. I'm like, yeah.
Yes, dude. Lord of the Rings, when I saw him like show up, I was like, yeah.
Yeah, dude.
Because he's always good. And he, you know, like Robert Englund with Freddy, I don't think you really have Chucky without that voice, you know, without his voice. It's so tied to that.
I think they made a big mistake by recasting it with Mark Hamill in that newer one.
Buddy, I'm your pal. Which was, you know, I get it. Maybe they were trying to repackage it for a technological age. However, voodoo will always be scary. Like, it's timeless in horror. That's right. They've been doing it since fucking White Zombie, way back with Bela Lugosi and shit. You know what I mean? Like, it's always been there. And you have to do it in a respectful way. I think there is some, you know, probably gray area now where you can't talk about certain shit or where stuff comes from, whatever. But it's always been such a cool thing, like Rainbow and the Serpent, which you probably haven't seen. But it can be scary. Like this idea of someone taking a doll and like fucking snapping its arms and your arms are just like, you know, gone the wrong way.
Dinah Manoff, who you probably wouldn't recognize except for I was watching the movie and she's like the aunt who takes care of Chucky and winds up being the first victim. And I was like, I know this lady. Like I know her. She was in some other 80s movie. She was Sarah Connor's roommate, dude.
Yes. I always thought about, Aunt Maggie. The face is so familiar, though.
Right.
And she's done a bunch of other shit because I feel like I saw her on TV and stuff, too, like popping up here and there. But, you know, even going into the 90s, and I could be wrong. Who knows? But
I picture her all bouncy and stuff. And I was like, what's she been in? She was in something fun. And I was like, oh, she got murdered by the Terminator. She full on did it with that dude and then went and made him a sandwich, dude. That's what ladies were expected to do in the 80s.
It's a terrible, terrible thing. Even though, man, I like a good sandwich.
Man, I would love a sandwich after some good sexes, but I don't want to get up and make it. But I would never ask my wife to like make me get up and make me a sandwich, bitch. Like, never.
Well, first off, never say bitch, because no matter how you say that in any context, is never going to come out right. It's never going to be good. But even like, get up and make me a sandwich. Or you could get up and be like, yo, you want a sandwich? And then you go make a sandwich, and then you come back, and she might be like, psh, I love this motherfucker. Like, you might get some tomorrow, Jason. I don't know. Or Frankenweiner. Frankenweisen.
Frank Weenus.
Frank Weenus. That's it. Frank Weenus. Okay. Continue.
I don't know what's hard about that.
We're going to get through this fucking episode. We can't even get through the cast.
Yeah, we are, dude. And Jack Colvin is Dr. Ardmore. I think he was the dude from The Incredible Hulk, dude.
The TV series?
Yeah. The guy that was guy that was the reporter who was always like looking for him.
Maybe.
I don't know. It looks like him here. I might just be making shit up, dude. I don't know. Now I got to take a look, though. Let's see. Oh, The Incredible Hulk. Yeah. Your boy, dude. Frank Weenus, guessed it.
Weenus for the winnest, dude.
That's right, dude. They called me the most likely to weenus when I was in high school.
The most likely to weenus right under your picture.
This is directed by Tom Holland, who knew Spider-Man was involved with this.
Right.
And it was written by Don Mancini, John Lafita, and Tom Holland.
Well, I think Tom Holland had done Fright Night, which is a fucking 80s masterpiece. You know what I mean? I mean, you know much about that. Like, you guys talked all about that shit and whatnot.
Yeah, dude. I was supposed to get Chris Sarandon to come on my podcast, and the dude bailed on me.
Which, you know, it is what it is. But he's, you still got fella to sit in front of your room in front of a bunch of people and talk about Fright Night, which is a fucking awesome movie. No matter how many times I watch Fright Night, I never get tired of Fright Night. Maybe one day we can do an episode about it.
We should do Fright Night because it's amazing. And I had never seen that one either. And let me tell you this. In order to like really shock and awe my audience, I put together like a 10-minute long monster sex montage from all these movies. And they just stood there and they were like, what the fuck's wrong with you, dude? You put like a lot of time into that. And I was like, you're goddamn right I did.
Just smiling. Frank Weenus, the fucking president.
Yeah.
Podcasting.
I love every second of it.
Okay, so we've got it all out there, distributed by United Arts. This thing opens up, fucking cop drama, like immediately punches you in the face. Bang, here we go. You got somebody running, car takes off, and he's like, don't fucking leave me, Eddie. Don't fucking leave me. And you got a cop behind him, Chris Sarandon. So we've got Brad Dourif right here and Chris Sarandon chasing each other around. Charles Lee Ray is the Lakeshore Strangler. And the way they talk about it, like, he's a mean motherfucker, dude. Just like nasty, just a gross human being. So he's trying to get away. His buddy leaves him. He's all pissed off. He's like, gotta get the fuck out of here. Shoots the lock off a toy store and kicks the door in. Sarandon's behind him, but he's like, ah, fuck, I gotta find a body. And we're like, what? What? Boy, what are we talking about here? I gotta find a body. And we see a huge wall of good guy dolls. And like I had mentioned earlier, this movie came out in response to the Cabbage Patch craze. But it also came out right around the time of the My Buddy doll.
The My Buddy, dude. That thing freaked me out before the whole Chucky thing. And then Chucky just must have killed the sales on that thing.
Absolutely, dude. My brother had one. He had a My Buddy doll. Oh. And I may have told you this story before, but I took it in. And I moved out of that house when we were 8 years old. Or I was 8 years old when we were all a bunch of fucking 8 year olds. But we moved out of that house when I was 8 years old, but I had seen Child's Play because I would have been six. And my mom had no reservations about throwing a horror movie on with all of us kids around. The woman she's amazing. She's a saint, gives her whole life to other people. And somehow she's just always reading Stephen King and like watching horror movies when we were coming up. But I remember taking my buddy one daytime, because I was not fucking around with that shit at night. I took his my buddy and buried it in the very back corner of my sister's. They slept in the same room. So me and my brother shared a room. My two sisters shared a room. And then my tiniest brother, he was just born and shit, slept by my mom or whatever. And I buried it deep in the closet. And I still remember this, dude. I was like, if that fucker wakes up, I'm going to hear their screams. That's the savage I was, though. Looking back on it, I'm like, damn. But in that fucking mind state, I was like, nah, man. Like, this doll shit ain't no fucking joke. But like, Teddy Ruxpin, you turn you around too, bitch. Like, I don't want to hear whatever you got to say. But yeah, so this was in response to mass consumerism. And so the doll, Charles Lee Ray, he's running, he's shot up. He gets hit by Chris Sanderson, which what's his, I can't even remember his name, detective somebody. Yeah, but Sanderson hits him and he's like, fuck, I got to find this body. And he crashes into a wall of dolls and starts doing this fucking, which is now iconic. And we forgot to mention in the Onyx episode that this is the voodoo they use.
Oh, really? The, I didn't even realize.
Dembella, give me the power, I beg of you. Sweet, cool, like Ghostbusters-esque storm starts happening in the sky.
Yeah.
Dude, it's so good. And it's fucking lightning, like, you know, shit kind of explodes everywhere.
It explodes, dude. Chris Sarandon goes flying backwards. I was like, damn.
The 80s was the decade of excess, dude. You didn't just fall over. You flew the fuck away.
Flew away, dude. Yeah.
A long way. And you're right. And so this all happens. Cut to Andy, played by Alex Vincent, making breakfast for his mom on his birthday, like breakfast in bed.
I'd have killed this little motherfucker, dude, for making that mess. He's spilling shit everywhere. He almost burns the house down. Just when he was getting a chair, though, and putting it up to the toaster on the counter, I was like, hot damn, we used to do that back in the day. We made our own breakfasts because our parents didn't get up with us and shit.
Fuck no, dude. I almost cut my thumb off once with an apple and a humongous knife. And I was just sitting there when my mom got home. It was so wrapped in toilet paper. And I'm like, ah, fuck, mom. And she's a nurse and shit. So she would just stitch us up at home. But she was like, what the fuck? Babe, I don't know. Accidents happen. But yeah, he does. And like the whole stick of butter on the burnt ass toast. And that toast is like just miserable. He's spilling milk everywhere.
Oh, I kill him.
Wake up, mom, wake up. He's walking with his breakfast or, you know, a tray.
All over the carpet, dude. Oh, man. That's how you get ants.
Is that what you want, Lana? You want ants? Because that's how you get fucking ants. You're right, though. He's spilling this shit everywhere. He goes and wakes her up. Andy, what time is it? Yada, yada. And for the write-up saying struggling mom, I get it. She can't buy like the doll, but their apartment's pretty nice.
Dude, they're in like downtown Chicago. And yeah, they have like a fucking brownstone and shit like on the 7th floor. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's way too nice for this single mom who works at the fucking perfume counter at Dillard's or whatever.
right. Wherever she works. It's like Friends, dude. Like Friends that people have talked about it forever. Like does not make sense.
Yeah, all no, dude. People.
Yeah, could afford that shit and have all that time off. So she wakes up with Andy, who is dressed. We don't know immediately that it's the... Well, yeah, we do, because we saw the good guy box. He's dressed just like one. He's got the good guy pajamas, the good guy footies. He's watching good guy on TV. There's a really cool commercial with like a big good guy dummy like, hey, kid. Yeah, it's weird. Hey, kids, now you can have your own good guy. And they've got one set up, and his eyes blink, and his head turns. He has his own name. And Andy's like, wow. And then the cartoon comes on. He's like, hey, I seen this shit. Mommy, can we open my presents?
Remember when Toys R Us would open up? I don't know if you had this experience over there on the East Coast, but like, remember when Toys R Us would open up and they would invite like the characters? You would go there to like meet people and dressed up in big costumes like that. And they had Cabbage Patch Kids and stuff.
I met the Ninja Turtles there, and I was so fucking disappointed because it was after the 90s movie came out. And they looked like they were paper mache turtles. Like, not my Michelangelo. I don't know what the fuck that is, but I know it's not my Michelangelo. So she lets him open the presents, and he gets real bummed out. You know, she got him the good guy tool set that comes with a hammer, which comes into play later. And some other shit, and he thinks
got him
he's
a giant box
with some clothes in it.
Fuck you, mom.
But struggling mom, though, maybe she just got it from the back. Like you said, you know, this dude's all up her ass all the time. Like, oh, you got to fucking come back to work. I don't care about your kid. Do you like your job? And so he's a little bummed out. And then we cut to her at work where she works with Aunt Maggie. They work in the same department store, but different levels. And this was when department stores were fucking booming.
Yeah,
you know, like the mall was just kind of coming up, so department stores were like huge. Well, I guess the mall had been pretty established, but either way, in downtown Chicago, this is like a Macy's or something like that, where it's real fucking big and you go all up and down. They're chit-chatting. She comes over and is like, yo, I think there's a fucking guy in the alley that's talking to you. First question would have been like, what were you doing in the alley?
Right. Like, why were you looking at this dude's wares? Like,
but Maggie's super tough, though. She immediately is presented, you know, she'll like talk back to the boss, like, shut that, like, get a fucking life, you know, whatever. Be cool, dude. And so they go out to buy the doll. It is a good guy doll. Like, yes, that's the one. They haggle a little bit, like, yeah, okay, $50, whatever, $35. They take the doll. She goes back in and says, I'm so excited. I got to go home. And the boss man is like, yo, so-and-so can't show up or whatever. I need you to cover from 7 till whenever. I can't do that. I got my kid. You can go home from 5 till so-and-so. And then Maggie steps in. It's like, yo, I'll hang out with Andy. Don't worry about it. Like, it's all good. So she goes home with this big box, all fucking excited. Like, Andy, it's your thing. Gives it to him. He opens it up. You know, it was, I mean, what was your experience like that? Do you remember something like that? Because I have a couple where I opened it and was just like, yes.
Yeah, dude. I remember Nintendo being like a huge one. And my parents did the whole like, oh, we can't afford it this year, buddy. Like, and I got Nintendo. And then Castle Grayskull was another one that I just fucking like, oh, shit. But then the year that I didn't get what I wanted was the fucking Turtle Sewer playset. And like them shits were all sold out and my parents didn't get it. And I was like, oh, fuck. Oh, another one was in 89, dude. I got like the Batman toys were non-existent, dude. You had to like suck off a homeless dude to get a Batman. And my parents didn't get it for me. So I was like, worst Christmas ever, dude. I was like, all this shit, fucking burn it. I didn't want any of it. I just wanted Batman and my fucking life is over now. So I'm going to go fucking kill myself. And
then I kicked you across the fucking room.
So I went over to my aunt's house where we always went on Christmas morning, but it was always like the big excitement was like the parent stuff, because aunts, you know, they just like got you like Hot Wheels and shit, you know. And I went over to my aunt's house and I got Batman, I got Joker, I got Bob the Goon, and I got the fucking Batcave, dude. And like
that's insane.
That Batman was the worst. It was like chubby Michael Keaton, and it had like a little yellow belt that came out on a string. It was the worst, dude.
I've even seen some of them in the wild now, and they really were just like, but Batman was everywhere in 89. Like it was on everything. It was fucking cereal. It was, and like you said, the hype around it was again, but it was the late 80s. It was the last, I mean, not to say we're not excessive anymore, but the 80s were really fucking excessive with like all kinds of stuff. But yeah, that surprise on Andy's face. And I had a few of those. I would say my Sega Dreamcast. My mom just like surprised me out of fucking nowhere. And I love the Dreamcast, dude. I don't care what anybody says. I wish I could survive a little bit. The House of the Dead with the light guns. Like the light guns were so on point.
Nice.
And it was just perfect. And Mortal Kombat 2. I remember that from my Sega Genesis being like... And my mom would do the same shit, like, oh, no, we ain't got no money. But now I look back on it, and I'm like, oh, but you had fucking crippling credit card debt at the time. Like, that's not good either. You know, credit was booming in the 80s, early 90s, still is. It's fucking trillion-dollar industry.
If only she would have just waited, dude, and got one out of some homeless dude's cart.
Right. And really excited about this, and he gets him out. Hi, what's your name? Hi, I'm Chucky. Wanna play? Ha ha ha. Very, and this is kind of cool. And we'll talk about it as we go, but you know, he's still very much doll. Like he's 100% doll.
Yeah.
And Andy's super excited, takes him with him. She tells him like, I'm so sorry, I gotta go. Aunt Maggie's gonna watch you. Cool. Aunt Maggie immediately we know something starts going on because he tells Maggie, like, she's like, go brush your teeth. And he's like, Chucky wants to watch the 9 o'clock news. Cause they're like, yo, fucking the Lakeside Strangler, Charles Lee Ray, is assumed dead, blah, 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 blah. And he goes to brush his teeth, takes Chucky with him. And then we see Chucky out in the living room, is just sitting there watching TV and shit. And you're like, oh man, something ain't right. Something ain't right. So Chucky goes to bed with Andy and they start whispering back and forth. And we figure out, like, immediately, if you didn't already know, you know, Chucky is, or Charles Lee Ray is now in the body of the good guy doll. The thing that I think a lot of people get hung up on this movie, and I want to address this right now, is they're like, I'll just kick that motherfucker.
Yeah.
My understanding of the lore is that he still has the strength of the strangler. And if you're a strangler, like, you have the ability to choke the shit out of people and do all kinds of heinous things. He's not like just doll without manpower. He's manpower inside doll. And that's what makes it, I think, a little more aggressive and a little more scary.
Now that I understand that, like, yeah, it changes my whole perspective.
It should 100%. And then where do we, Andy's only asleep for a little while and Maggie starts hearing things around the apartment. And I want to say that Andy's mom calls and is like, yo, is everything okay? And she's like, oh, you know, yeah, I'm good. Kick what's his name in the pants for me. I'm great. Thanks for this phone. And out of nowhere, we get a POV of just like, bruh, and a fucking hammer smacks her right in the forehead. This is a great fall into a car. Ooh. Sometimes they're done good. Sometimes they're done really poorly.
Yeah.
This is a good one, dude. Whoever the stunt person was that's fucking flailing the whole way down.
Yeah, dude.
Stunt people don't get enough credit. No. They don't get enough credit. Here's to all the stunt people in the world. I only have a big jug of water, but here's to you, stunt people, because I fucking love you. She comes home from work. The cops are all over the place. They're like, hey, what the fuck are you doing? She's like, no, I live here. All the way screaming through the house, you know, Andy, Andy, Andy. Finally finds him, mommy. And this is where Sanderson meets us. And what's her name in this? Do you still got it in front of you? I don't want to keep calling her Andy's mom if I can. And I'm trying, Mrs. Barkley. He just Andy's keeps calling her Mrs. Barkley.
Got it going on. Karen Barkley, dude. Good. Remember?
No, I know Barkley, but I don't know her first name. I guess we can just call her Mrs. Barkley.
Karen.
Karen?
She's Karen Barkley.
Karen Barkley. All right. So Karen gets to Andy, starts to talk to Sanderson, and somehow they get fixated on Andy's boots because Chucky had run through the flour. He had kicked over some flour or sugar or something.
Yeah, the bottom of Chucky's feet have pictures of like little hammers and knives and shit on them.
Not knives, it's like rulers and hammers and stuff. I don't, but I want to say now. No, that you
there's a knife, dude. There's a toy knife.
I believe he's killed somebody with everything on his little outfit. Because the ruler in the second one, he beats the shit out of that teacher with it.
Yeah, dude. We sold the shit out of those at Spirit.
Ah, dude. Chucky is a profitable IP.
Fuck yeah,
Chucky.
It is, dude. Like, that shit's sold, man.
Yeah, it still does. It's everywhere. So he asks Andy, like, hey, what's on your feet there, bud? And he's like, oh, these are my good guy booties or some shit. And he takes a look at him and she's like, what the fuck are you insinuating? Like, am I getting murdered? You know, this woman that he really cares for. So they end up spending the night. She's going to take Andy to school and he's taking Chucky with him. Like, come on, Chucky. But Chucky fucking talks him into going to the ghetto and shit.
He's like, hey, I got better plans. Instead of going to school, let's get on the L train.
Right. And he's just sitting there riding with fucking Chuck on the thing.
6-year-olds on there with all these crackheads, dude, going down to Spanish Harlem.
He really is fucking, it's a mess. So yeah, you're like people over barrels and shit. And they're going to this rundown home, but he sets Chucky down for a second. He's like, hang on, Chucky, I gotta go take a piss or I gotta go tinkle.
Yeah, dude, he just whips it out, dude. He doesn't give a shit. I'm like, this little kid's legit, dude. He's not scared of nothing.
Right? And he's like, Chucky, where are you going? Or he's like, Chucky, where'd you go?
He's running around the ghetto. Chucky. Right. There's all these molesters and stuff looking at him like, oh, man.
Prime meat running around.
Hey, Fred, look at this out here. This is prime real estate.
Sounds great, Frank. Oh, wait.
They're shipping them to us on the L train now.
Shipping them to us. So Chucky ends up in the house where we see Eddie Caputo, which I don't think we had seen. I don't remember if we saw Eddie when he took off in the car at the beginning.
Just real quick. Yeah.
And he starts talking to him. And we do see, do we see full Chucky here? We see little snippets of him climbing through windows and shit, but he don't come through the window until he sees old boy at the voodoo palace.
Right.
So I don't know if we see him or not, but we see the little hand and shit turn the gas on.
Yeah.
And Eddie even sees the kid outside. He's like, Chucky, Chucky. He points the gun at him. He's like, okay, never mind. And maybe Chucky scurries by and he goes to shoot him. And that's what ignites the gas.
Right.
This place the fuck up again.
The whole foundation crumbles and the building falls over. I was like, fuck, I mean, yeah.
It probably wasn't super hard to find, you know, and it's like being in Detroit. It is not hard to find abandoned buildings. They're doing good. They're bringing the city back a little bit, but it's still, you get far enough out and it's like, ah, fuck. You could buy a whole lot for $100. I don't know what to do with it, but you could buy it.
In 88, so, dude, they probably didn't even call the cops to tell them they were going to blow this fucking place up. They just did it.
They were like, we're going to make it happen. I did hear in the commentary, though, that the one dude was saying a bunch of people were calling United Arts and saying, oh, you ruined my windows or my chandeliers and shit. And, you know, it turned out all to be false, but all these people were trying to get money out of United Arts for blowing up a building.
That's amazing.
Like, shit, that sucks. So Andy was like in the ditch or some shit, or he gets blown away somewhere. But they end up, the cops end up there, and Sanderson is talking to Karen and is like, yo, like, what the fuck, your kid is saying some crazy shit, essentially. Like, Chucky did it. Don't worry about it. Chucky did it. And they're like, no, Chucky didn't fucking do it. And then he's like, no, I promise you, Mom. And they're like, hey, let's get him in for evaluation. And so
Chucky bought my ticket on the L train.
So they leave Chucky at home. She takes Andy to, I think it was when Andy was at the police station, the doctor was observing and says something along the lines of, I've seen enough. Yeah, we need to,
I've seen enough. Like, Chucky killed my aunt and then he blew up this crackhead. And he's like, okay, I've heard enough.
Right.
I've been following the Incredible Hulk all this time. This is the craziest shit I've ever heard or seen.
That sad Hulk music always gets me. So he's going to be under evaluation. And now we cut back to Mrs. Barkley at home and she's got the doll. She's dragging the thing around and shit. And she starts to shake the motherfucker and she's like, say something. He's like, hi, I'm Chucky. Want to play? And she's like, you motherfucking. And so she sets it down, thinks she's losing her mind. Like, my poor kid, you know, what the fuck is going on? And then goes to get the box and shakes it around and the batteries fall out.
Yeah.
And that's when she takes Chucky. And this is like the music swells and the score is good in this. I don't know who did it, but it is good. The music swells. And she turns him down or turns him over and looks and realizes he's never had batteries in him. It's the one thing that he didn't take into account is, hey, I should probably have batteries. I'm talking to him because if not, voodoo. And she turns him over, starts the fireplace, and she's badass right here. Like, has him in one hand, a match in her mouth. Is like, yeah, fireplace, throws it in there. Struggling mom with a fireplace in Chicago. So gets it going and she's like, talk to me or I'm gonna fucking throw you in the fire. And he's like, yeah, bitch, you stupid slut. And this is where we really get to see this puppet articulated, and this shit is masterful.
Yeah, dude. It's so good.
This is where this movie, I think the only way it works is because the facial expressions are so crazy on this doll. And he's thrashing her, like punching her in the face. But to his advantage, now he's tiny, so he can just roll under the couch. Right. Like, gone. They get into a little bit. I don't remember when they get separated, but she goes back to Sanderson, is like, the doll's fucking real. the doll is fucking real. You got to listen to me. And he's like, ah, fuck you. Like, he doesn't say fuck you, but he's like, ah, you know, that's silly. It doesn't make any sense because who would believe you?
It's always the same thing in the 80s movies. Go home and get some sleep.
Right. You need a value.
You'll sleep this crazy right off.
Exactly. So he gets in his car and is like, have a good night, Mrs. Barkley, you know. But she tells him, like, I'm going to talk to the guy I bought this thing from. And he's like, don't go there. Bad part of town this time of night. Don't go there. She's like, whatever. I'm going. Like, you know, she's a mama bear protecting her cub. She's going to do anything. So he's like, oh, shit. You know, he gets in his car and he's like, fuck. Starts having this change of heart. And then all of a sudden in the back seat, here comes fucking Chucky, dude. And Chucky's like on it. He's got a like a some kind of rope or something around his neck, but essentially pulled right back into the headrest. And he's screaming like, shit, shit, crashing into everything. At one point, Chucky gets under the seat and is like stabbing up by his nuts.
That was nuts, dude. Literally.
literally nuts. And he's like trying to dodge this knife that's coming up. And they hit, he hits a fire hydrant or something. And start seeing Chucky fucking running around like the car.
His car flips, and you see little Chucky legs running around, dude. That creeped me out. I was like, dang.
It's still this first one. I feel like is still in a lot of ways an effective horror movie. If you don't know the full every experience of Chucky, because it just continues to get more and more outlandish the further it goes.
Right.
There's armies of Chuckies now. Like he can put his soul into fucking a whole army of dolls and shit. He eventually takes a shot at him and Chucky's like, fuck, I can bleed, you know, is where he realizes something's wrong. He's like, I'm fucking turning human. I got to get out of here.
I can watch Chucky get shot all day, dude. Every time he gets shot in this movie, he goes flying back.
Thing in the 80s, dude, you couldn't just fall over. You had to fucking explode. Yeah. And he does too. Across the room. So now Sanderson is like, oh shit, the doll's real. I got to go save Karen. He finds her in the alley where these dudes are getting like real nasty and stuff with her. They're like, oh yeah, what else you got to fucking pay me for information, lady? Da 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 da. And he shows up, just pulls the pistol. Fucking cop. Anybody else want some? Okay, we know that Chucky's bad. Cut to Chucky with our voodoo priest. This is a cool scene, dude. Yeah, dude. This whole set, like the set design, is spot on. It's like the cave in The Lost Boys. It's just so fucking well done with all this. And Chucky shows up at the window. And again, this puppeteering is silly, you know, and it's a combination of there were a few small actors that would do these like jumping off the counter or, you know, running by something real quick. But for the most part, when he shows up and he's like, hey, how you like the new look? Fucking great. And he's like, oh, Chucky, you're an abomination. And he's fucking yelling at him. And he goes running to the other room. Like, he's like, I need to get out of this fucking body right now. And you're going to tell me how to do it. And he ends up having his voodoo voodoo doll. I don't know. And he's like, ah, you're looking for this? And he starts snapping this motherfucker into pieces. And he's just crumbling all over the floor. And with his dying breath, because Sarandon and Mrs. Barkley show up at his house and he tells them, like, you got to destroy the heart. But Chucky does learn that the only way to get out of the body is to put his soul into the first person that he revealed himself to.
Right.
And that's a big piece of Chucky lore that goes on for a long time. So now he's dead. And Chucky is headed to the institution where Andy's being held, which is a scary fucking place, dude. I don't know about this hospital.
Who lets their kid go to this place, man? The paint is peeling off the walls and it's just bars. This kid's six and didn't do shit.
It's like it's bad.
They put him in the fucking Alcatraz, dude.
Real, dude. That's what it looks like. And he sees, I love this sequence of Chucky like climbing up into one of the windows. That's, you know, it just looks so good with the fast little feet. And they were talking about that too, that they hired a mime that came in and watched the puppet work for like 2 weeks and then taught the actors how to be more robotic like that. So it almost had that animatronic look, even when it was a live person.
Nice.
That's pretty good, man. And so Chucky gets into the hospital, snatches the keys from the night guard, as it always happens, but he has it to his advantage that he's small. Like, you're not expecting a fucking little tiny hand to come up out of nowhere and take his thing. He goes to Andy's room. He's got the fucking knife of Dembala. He's ready to do some shit. But Andy had seen him. He was hiding, and he sneaks out. They get into where the doctor's at, and Andy's like, fucking... Ah. And the doctor's like, calm down. It's okay. It's okay. And why they have an electroshock machine in a children's ward of a psychiatric hospital.
This doctor is manhandling a little six-year-old and trying to stab him with a fucking syringe, dude. This is not a good place.
Yeah, that's right. He's like, just fucking take the needle, and he'd be so old. He's like, fucking, I can't fight a six-year-old off. And then Chucky runs up out of nowhere and throws the electroshock dealie on his head and just cranks that motherfucker. Yeah. And Andy's like, just watching, like, holy shit. And this dude's all over the floor until he's bleeding everywhere. And Andy, I can't remember exactly how he gets out of the hospital, but Mrs. Barkley and Sarandon have the conversation of, I always told him, go home. And I'm like, this kid knows his way around fucking Chicago.
He took the L train, dude. He knows.
That is true. That is true. So he gets to the house and starts to home alone it a little bit. Not very well. Just like pushes one bench in front of the door. Chucky gets in there. He's getting ready to do the voodoo. He's got Andy on the ground and he's like, I do a Dembala. Like, I'm going to be 6 years old again. This is fucking crazy. And he's doing that. They come in. Sanderson and Mrs. Barkley get a hold on Chucky somehow. Chuck him somewhere. He's always just getting thrown around. Shot. And they eventually get him in the fireplace. And this is, you know, this kid delivers a great line right here where Chucky's fucking flailing like, what? All against the gate, dude. It's scary.
That was
like,
he's scary, just, dude.
Let me the fuck out of here, you piece of shit. And da-da. I just heard my mic like peeking. So sorry about that. But yeah, he's fucking smashing all over it. And Andy hits the gas because his mom is against the grate holding Chucky in there. Andy hits the gas and gets to the matches, and he hits it, and Chucky just stops on a dime. And he's like, Andy, no, I thought we were friends to the end. This is the end, friend. Fucking, he's on fire going nuts. Dude, this effect is so good because he's just, you know, flying on, and there's somebody behind it who's on fire, right? Or at least a little bit on fire. And so, oh, that's right. Because Chucky had cut Sanderson's calf and he was still in the bedroom. That's why it was only the two of them out there.
What a pussy. He gets his calf cut and he's out for the count.
I know. It wasn't like that Pet Sematary Achilles, dude. Like, right. That'll get you. Yeah. You ain't fucking. Get back up and walk, and your shit's flip flapping around. But yeah, he was still in the bedroom. They go back in there. She's like, Andy, go get a towel or something. I'd be like, Andy, don't fucking move. I will go get a towel.
Yeah.
But you know, that's neither here nor there. It wouldn't be as exciting. He gets to the kitchen, grabs the towel, turns around and like drops it, and he looks, and fucking Chucky's gone. Just smoky spot on the thing. And he sees Chucky. Now Chucky is burned to a crisp, and again, this puppet is fucking scary, dude. And yeah, this little kid, dude, is like kicking his feet away from him, you know, and he's pushing, and Chucky's just like on fire with one fucking eyeball coming at him, wires and shit everywhere, like fucking friends till the end. Full on Terminator,
baby Terminator.
And then Anderson ends up, or maybe it was Mrs. Barkley that ends up taking the gun. Yeah, I think she puts a bunch in him, like blows a leg off, blows an arm off, and Chucky blows the head off too. And so now he's in pieces everywhere. At this time, Detective Sidekick shows up and is like, oh, it's fucking doll. What the fuck are you? He's like, don't touch that fucking doll, dude. Like, don't fucking touch that. And he's like, fuck you. And he picks up the head and shit and he's holding it, playing with it. And then out of nowhere, Chucky's arm just comes blasting through the wall, like perfect placement, and just starts strangling. Like, he's always the strangler. and he's just strangling the shit out of this dude. And then they end up hitting it in the heart, and we get the iconic freeze frame at the end, which is, I mean, 70s leading into the 80s, where you just get that still and this creepy kind of like piano-y music floats in, and that was the end of the movie that nobody thought was going to be what it is today.
No, I would not have guessed that this would start a franchise, but it certainly did.
So what did you think? I want all your thoughts on your first viewing. Hopefully first viewing. I hope you maybe one day want to go back and watch Child's Play again because it is fun. Oh, we didn't even mention the best scene in the whole movie is when Chucky's all beat the fuck up and he's in the elevator. And the old people are like, she's like, ew. She's like, what an ugly doll. He's like, fuck you, bitch. But that was another thing I wanted to say real quick that I picked up in that commentary. I paid attention to it. As he becomes more human, he starts to look more like Brad Dourif. Like the hairline starts to recede and all kinds of shit starts to change. The eyes do different things. And I'm like, that's genius to put that much thought into it. You know, like he's going to continually change. And they had a bunch of puppets. There were like 9 or 10 main ones. A bunch of, they called them like thrashers that, you know, you could destroy. And then a few that Andy would carry around or Mrs. Barkley would carry around that, you know, could get beat up and bumped on shit and you didn't have to worry about it too much. So, okay. Now tell me, Frank Weenus, Child's Play, 1988.
This is my Weenus review on Child's Play. No, I thought I respect it for everything that it is. I mean, like, it started a franchise. It came at a time when it was like, let's fuck with kids' innocence, which was always like the way to scare kids.
It goes back to like the Twilight Zone and shit. Like Talkie Tina is still fucking scary, dude. Like a doll that wants to murder you. And I think it even goes further back than that to the 20s or some shit. But yeah, killer dolls are, there's something.
Still doing it, dude. There's Annabelle. There's Megan. There's all these like revamps of this idea.
There is something inherently creepy about dolls. I mean, this movie scared the shit out of me enough to hide a doll. You know what I mean?
Yeah, somebody else. Yeah. You wanted to, it messed you up so bad. You wanted genuine screams from your family.
Okay. So I hear a butt coming. So your butt.
I mean, no, there's not really a butt. I don't know. Like, I didn't love it, but I mean, I get it.
Yeah, and that's fair. I think it's because it is so radically different than all the other ones. By the time you get to Bride of Chucky, that shit's like joke after joke after joke. Right. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's much more slapstick, whereas this was just like straight killer doll. And to your point, he became the icon that he is. I remember doing the International House of Horrors with Josh, and he told me we used to watch YouTube. We didn't even know what the fuck it was. We just wanted to find Chucky, the killer doll. It's like, okay, that's great. So how many good guy dolls out of 5 do you give Child's Play from 1988?
I'm going to go 3.5. Because
that's fair.
I would watch it again. I'm interested in seeing the other ones. So like I'm there.
So the first three all have Andy Vincent as Andy.
Okay.
Like it follows him all the way up to being a teenager at military school, which is fucking pretty funny when Chucky starts switching out like paintball rounds for live rounds.
Yeah.
Second one is my personal favorite. And it's probably a nostalgia thing in a lot of ways too, but it was just bigger. And like I said, Chucky was doing like a lot more and he gets a lot funnier. You start to see the personality of Charles Lee Ray and they're like, yo, we got Brad Dourif. Like, let this man fucking crack some whips here and there. Everything is amplified a little bit. It's not a great movie, but I think it's just fun. Like it's fun.
This
I don't
is
know.
Fun. Like it was cool. You know, like
it's a good popcorn movie.
Yeah.
I would give it probably 4 out of 5 good guy dolls.
All right.
No, last week you determined we could do fractions. So 3.75 good guy dolls. You could keep Chucky's feet.
You can blow pieces off of Chucky.
If anything, it's cool to see how they put him back together at the beginning of the second one. It's cool. They like rip all the char off and polish his skull all up and like put new eyes in him and shit. And the machine goes bad and traps the guy's hand. And he's like, fuck. Getting electrocuted and it starts off pretty hard.
Nice.
All right. So Child's Play, 1988. If you haven't seen it, check it out. If you haven't seen it in a while, check it out. It's a fun movie. So I found this little piece of paper, and I don't know if I don't know when I wrote this. I don't know if I've read this before, but I don't think so. It's all written in purple ink. Did I show you my ego tattoo, my no ego tattoo?
You said you were going to get it, but I don't think you showed it to me.
Yeah.
Nice.
I don't know if you can see it, but yeah.
I like it.
Little, just the word ego with the red line through it. And this must have been written maybe, I don't know, a year or two ago, but it said, what is the opposite of ego? Sometimes I'll just ask myself a question. That's a good practice, is write yourself a question and try and figure out what the answer is. It'll help you solve some shit real quick. So, and I'm going to go through this pretty quick. You maybe we'll just read a couple pieces because it's a lot. But ego is the enemy of freedom. And these are just, you know, thoughts based on things that I picked up in reading and learning and stuff like that. It begins subtly by shackling us in the chains of pride. Pride doesn't listen. Pride waits for its turn to be heard. And all this, if you can see it, I'm just jotting fucking notes, dude. It's like nothing, you know, just putting little lines down. Have an idea, write another line.
It looks like the killer from Seven's Manifesto.
How did you figure out my secrets? Pride is fixated on the micro. A macro view of existence is an enemy of pride. And this is the one that kind of sticks out to me. Pride hinders learning. It makes us believe that a brush can create the same stroke twice.
Yeah,
and it can. You know what I mean? It can. Ego will see an artist blaming the canvas for not bending to his will. And that's some shit, too.
Yeah.
Ego is the end of learning. The free mind sees only opportunity for future growth. Ego desires the reward. The free mind enjoys the process. And then the last one, ego needs to be seen. The free mind is a reflection of a natural state of being. Ego's a motherfucker, dude.
Sure
it
is.
Really is. I'm telling you, the more I can let it go, it just seems like the better overall existing is. It really fucking is.
Yeah, man. The most trouble I've ever been in was because of my own ego.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure. It's a motherfucker to fight, dude. And we're told from the time we're children, like, you know, have an ego, like you're special, have a big pride. And there have been people who have been successful who have had big egos, but at the same time, it usually ends up burning them in the ass, you know, at the end, like somebody like a Napoleon, or in our time, a fucking Donald Trump, dude, is like a fucking ego maniac.
Yeah.
Like ego maniac. And that's where it gets like fucking scary. You know what I mean? Like Hitler was a fucking ego maniac. I'm not comparing the two. I don't want anyone to take it that way. But there were also people who did do some good shit, but they usually ended up kind of falling off in the end. And then I've read about a bunch of people who you've never heard of who did like all this amazing shit, but never wanted the fuck credit. They're like, nah, dude, I'm just doing my fucking thing. Like people trying to give him promotion, like, please fucking do this. And like, no, I don't want the title. I'll take the responsibility, but I don't want the fucking title that comes with it because I don't care about that. You know, I care about what I'm doing, making, you know, some sort of contribution. I think it's inherent in us to want to contribute something, you know, with our existence, whether that gets beat the fuck out of you by life somehow. And, you know, you just become a bitter fucking bastard like the dude from Dust Till Dawn. Hey, what the fuck are you ringing that bell for? I want a room, you mean old bastard. Yeah, and I think that does happen to people. I think, you know, you do get to a point where you're almost like hardened that life can be okay. And you become really comfortable in that. And there's people who have been in a lot of like terrible situations and have come out of it, you know, to be in a contented place or a peaceful place. Like you don't have to stay where you are forever. But your ego is the one that likes to blame other people for your situation. You know, your ego is the one that likes to put some shit on social media and then jump back in fucking 10 minutes and look for the likes. Like your ego wants the likes. It wants the little dopamine hits. Your ego doesn't like to sit down and power through shit even when you don't feel like doing it. It doesn't like that. Like, hey, I'm just committed to this process. Your ego loves when you say, oh, I got this. I'm good at my shit. It loves that. It loves that. Cause then now you just build a fucking ego box and you're like, oh, and then anybody that tries to, you know, tell you anything different, you're like, oh, well, fuck you. You just don't understand me, you know, ego. Well, they just don't fuck get it. Don't understand this, that, or the other. And that's the way your ego will get you. It is pride, you know. Pride will get you to a point where you go into crippling fucking debt to keep up an illusion of your lifestyle for a lot of people. Like, that is fucking ego. That is pride. Instead of saying, yo, we could live like real less than this shit and be great and, you know. But ego will put people to the point where they're just like, fuck, and, you know, stuck. And that shit sucks. Like, we were talking about credit and loans and shit. And that is almost, it may be a $1 trillion business. I don't know. I don't know how much credit is. I know I looked at one quarter one time and it was like $850 billion or some shit collectively that we use as credit, you know, borrowed money. But your ego will tell you to keep that shit up instead of being like, yo, look at the place you're in. You know, you're not stuck here. You can make a change. Fucking do your thing. Figure it out. And usually when you start to let that go, the world feels a lot calmer and a lot fucking cooler and things feel easier to do. You know what I mean? Yeah. It is still the number one fucking deathbed regret is I didn't live my true self. Yeah. Your ego will make you not your true self. It'll make you be something else to impress other people around you. Your ego will fucking punish you in almost like every way. And it's not to say it's impossible to get rid of, but I think you can get really, really close to it and at least keep it like super in check. So you're not. And we live in an ego driven society. You know what I mean? The technological age has put us all in this fucking like me. I'm the director of my own life.
Yeah.
And I'm the star of my own life. It, when you do that, it excludes everyone else around you who you are interconnected to. And it's fucking crazy, man. We just need, and they said the Harvard just finished this big study I was reading up on. And it was a human condition type study. I don't know, but the longest one I've ever done, like 100 years or 80 years, or is multi-generational study. And they found the number one thing. And I think I told you this before. I'll probably say this shit a lot. I hope somebody remembers it. The number one thing to a contented, relatively happy life is meaningful relationships with other human beings. But they have to be meaningful. Those people you care about, you know what I mean? It doesn't have to be everyone. But you have to have those people around you because we're not meant to be lone wolves and shit. Some people are, but you find them out in the fucking woods, like covered in hair and shit, eating raw fish. Like, yeah, fuck, I've been out here forever. But we're really not meant for that. And your ego can hinder those relationships too. How many people have you seen in your own family? Because I know a bunch in mine where you've seen an argument hinder a relationship over the course of like 10 fucking 15 years.
Yeah, dude.
That shit is real. And I bet you anybody listening to this knows that shit is real. Like, you see people who are bitter at each other for a fucking lifetime and then they get to their deathbed and they're like, fuck, man, why? Why did I hold on to that? Because your ego wanted you to be right.
Right.
Ego wanted you to be right and not just accept it for what it is. And that sucks. It hinders those relationships. And that, according to fucking Harvard, and from what I heard, they're an okay school, fucking... That's the key, dude. That's the key, is having meaningful relationships with other people. But they can't be, you know, relationships that are ego driven. You know, you'll have those people in your life where you're like, yo, you know, for me, it's my wife, it's my brothers, my sisters, those people that have been around. Usually it's the ones that have been closest to you for a long time where you're like, you know, we came up in this shit together.
Right.
Those are the ones where, you know, your ego wants to be defensive, where, you know, lack of ego is vulnerable and you can be vulnerable with those people. Those are the meaningful relationships where you can say, yo, I'm fucking hurting. Yo, this shit fucking sucks. Or yo, I'm going through this. But you don't bring like, it's somebody else's fault I'm going through this. You know, you never bring that. When I listen to my brothers and sisters and shit, it's crazy, dude. Like, a couple of my brothers are like, yo, I'm on this shit with you. And they're like, it's fucking doing good shit. And I'm like, wow, dude, I don't know. That's fucking awesome. Like, I don't know how to respond to it. Like, it's in all of us. It's not a me thing. Everyone has the capacity. Fucking Frank Wiener has the capacity. You know, anybody I know has the capacity for it. And it's possible, man. But ego's a motherfucker. just watch yours for a couple days. Watch what it'll do to you. It'll fucking drive you like the way you think and shit. It'll trap you. The more you can let that shit go, the better you'll be.
Yeah, man. No, I try to keep my ego. I think that I was somebody that used to have a really big ego. I think that having, I had late onset panic attacks. And I think that that kicked my ego right in the fucking nuts, dude, and showed me. Because I was one of those guys who was like, oh, fucking depression isn't real. Like, just fucking be happy. What the fuck's wrong with you, you know? And then I was like, oh, shit, there's, like, stuff that actually is real and, like, you can't control it. And, yeah, so, like, I had a big ego and fucking the fates fucking showed me who was boss. And I like to think that now I have a much less ego and I certainly am more open-minded. Toward people. I will never fucking say I'm right and you're wrong. Even if I know I'm right, I'll be like, maybe I'm fucked up. I don't know.
Well, and that's the thing is, you know, is eliminating the, I guess, illusion of right and wrong. Because we think, and I always give the example of the rainy day, you know, for the drought stricken farmer, it's amazing. It's the best thing they could hope for. For the family that planned the day at the beach, they're cursing at the rain, but the rain is not inherently good or bad. And most things in life are not inherently good or bad. It's our perception of said thing that makes it either good or bad. So you got a choice there, but it's hard to learn to slow down enough to make the fucking choice. Great episode, dude. You got anything else you want to add?
Weenus is out.
Weenus. So next week, Fright Night. We do Fright Night.
All right.
Yeah.
All right.
You've seen, you've only watched it probably the one time, right?
One time.
Okay, so it's good for a rewatch, especially because what's his name? His fucking piece of shit friend. I'm like, how do you stay friends with this guy?
That guy's the worst.
Terrible. Okay, so for the Horror Pop Extravaganza, episode 18, I have been Pops Ghostly.
And I'm Frank Weenus.
And we will see all you creepos next week.